You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Becky Hawley. Good morning, Becky.
Good morning, Eric.
It's good to have you on the show this morning. And so the way we start the show is, who are you? It's a big question, but you take it qualities, whatever way you want to take it. What do we need to know to start the conversation?
I will be honest, that question is a bit intimidating. But when I think of who am I as opposed to what do I do, I think of roles. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way for me to relate.
It's a little bit like who I am with and what I do, kind of a little mixed together.
Exactly. So I'll start with I'm a mother, and I am a budding entrepreneur. I am a wife. And I guess the quality of human being I am, I'm very generous, courageous, crazy.
And you've lived long enough to know how to wear those labels.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Very creative, very loving, and a lifelong learner.
That's a wonderful start. That's a wonderful start.
Good.
You brought some music with you, and the first song we're going to play is Annie DeFranco's Joyful Girl. Do you want to say anything about it before we play it or after we play it?
I guess to preface it, this song really embodies how I feel like I move through the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go ahead and play the song, and I'll see if I have more to say after that.
Okay. Well, here it goes.
I do it for the joy it brings, 'cause I'm a joyful girl, 'cause the world owes me nothing. We owe each other. And I do it 'cause it's the least I can do. I do it 'cause I learned it from you. And I do it just because I want to. 'Cause I want to. Everything I do is judged, and they mostly get it wrong. But oh well, the bathroom mirror has not budged, and the woman who lives there can tell the truth from the stuff that they say. She looks me in the eye, says, "Would you prefer the easy way?" No, well, okay then. Don't cry. Me nothing, we owe each other. cause it's the least I can do. Do it cause I learned it from you. Do it just because I want to. The one, so.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Becky Hawley. So, Becky, that is a bittersweet song about a joyful girl, and it kind of holds the line that I value of opposites and how they have to work. We have to work with them without being undone by them. What experiences have helped to kind of shape the sensibility that you live with, the values, the generosity that you described before? What are the things that have helped to make you who you are now, as opposed to who you were 30 years ago or 20 years ago?
Well, I guess, you know, in relating to the song itself, one of the things that I try to do with every experience in life is to look at it from a place of joy. You know, we all go through our ebbs and flows in life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have the good things and then we have the hard things. And as I go through life, I really try to look at those hard things and find the gift in them.
So the place of joy is to look for the good that came of them.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what, how did you learn that lesson? How did you learn to hold it in that way?
I don't know that I can narrow that down to one experience.
What were three or four or whatever, what process, you know?
I think the process of learning how to express myself fully, I hate to sound cliche, but I'm gonna go with it just because. I think that a drastic change in my life happened when I went to a festival called Burning Man.
Mm-hmm.
Where anything was possible. I actually got to see a whole city full of people who were just being and doing everything that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Which in turn gave me an opportunity to look at myself and how I move through the world. And who I am and who I'm becoming. And in that process, there was a shift that happened, mm-hmm, for me.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that seeing that it's possible to just be who you are, whoever that is, whether you're happy, whether you're sad, really caused a shift for me.
So what you saw in them was something that was comfortable in their own skin.
Yes.
In a way that you hadn't experienced being around people who were comfortable in their own skin before.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So in those kinds of comparisons, we often reform ourselves how did you then begin that? What happened? What was the process like then when you began to integrate that into your life? What did you do?
Well, I started hoop dancing, and
that could be a non sequitur or it could be a total mistake.
I started hoop dancing. It was a way for
Which
me.
Which is what is hoop dancing?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't make those assumptions. So you know what a hula hoop is?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so dancing with a hula hoop.
That's what I would have inferred, but I do not know.
Okay. Yes. And that process of learning how to dance with a hula hoop mm-hmm. Actually brought so much joy into my life. I like in ways that I couldn't describe, at least in the beginning. You know, it was a way for me to see myself as beautiful and expressive. And I've always been a dancer at heart, even from a very, very early age. Mm-hmm. And it was almost mm-hmm. like reintroducing that to my soul. And as I mean, it was a hoop dance was also a doorway for me to begin interacting with our community in a way mm-hmm. that I didn't expect.
How did it open doors?
Well, I was employed at Alternatives, and I would get out on my lunch break in the parking lot, and I would dance in the parking lot with my hula hoop. I was a little obsessed with it for the first couple of years. And so people began to know me as the crazy hula hooping bank lady.
Right.
And
but you were going to get it.
I was going to get it in. I was going to get it in one way or another. Yeah. And, you know, I always had a hoop with me in my car, in my office. Like I said, it was a way for me to interact with people, because people would come up and ask me, you know, how long have you been doing that? Or I always wanted to learn how to do that, you know, and wow, that's really awesome. And it opened up a whole new world for me, because I just, you know, I have seen myself as a... trying to think of the right word or words. I've always seen myself as small.
Uh-huh.
And this gave me an opportunity to feel big. And it continued to grow. I performed for Ithaca Festival. I started teaching at the circus school last year. I hosted a One World Hoop Troupe for a little while, which was a weekly gathering for people to just come and play.
Uh-huh.
And as I was teaching people to play, I was learning how to play yep. myself. Yep.
That's the biggest. We learn what we teach.
It's exactly.
Very. Yeah.
We often find that what we're teaching teaches us.
Yes.
And through that process of play. It really shifted the way that I look at the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you used an expression before that you were small
mm-hmm.
in your own eyes or in your own way of being. And that all of a sudden just kind of hits all sorts of metaphors for me. Being big isn't necessarily about being puffed up. It's letting, and there's an image in the Christian scriptures about letting your light shine.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people misread that for being the showy one. But when you let your light shine, people don't see the source of your light. They see everything around you that you illuminate.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different, when you get into the metaphor concretely, that every one of our lights lights something up different for somebody else. And there's no chance for us to be too big if we focus on what we're seeing, as opposed to try to look at the source, which is not something we can see.
Right.
And that's, your story has evoked that quality.
It's funny that you should mention that, actually. I oftentimes would be told, you know, how amazing or, you know, transformative or inspirational or beautiful my hoop mm-hmm. dancing was.
Right.
And to speak to the metaphor you were just referencing, I often replied with, I am a mirror.
Right.
I'm a mirror of all of the beauty and the inspiration and amazingness that mm-hmm. surrounds me.
Right. Don't look at me, look at what I help you see.
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. To me, that you, we live in a culture that values scientific objective knowledge, which usually means looking out and taking things apart. But spiritual or religious knowledge is that which is gained by looking at what the mirror is showing us, so that we can begin to see our own beauty and our own ugliness and our own strengths and weaknesses with greater clarity.
Indeed.
And that's where the two, science and spirituality or religion, are just different endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very different and mutually corrective in some ways.
Indeed, sure.
So, so where has hoop dancing led you?
Oh gosh, all over the place. As I said before, I led One World Hoop Troop for a little while, which was a good first foray into teaching, but without the label of teacher. Mm-hmm. I've kind of shied away from that for many years. But over the years, people have asked, you know, why don't you teach? Why don't you teach? And so last year, I got my certificate. No, not last year. Year before last, I got my certification in hoop dance instruction, and taught my first classes, my first official classes at Circus Culture. Mm-hmm. Last September. And that was really fun. I have also performed quite a bit in the area. I've performed with Whiskey Tango Sideshow. Mm-hmm. For Wine and Circus a couple of years, Ithaca Festival, and various, you know, home parties and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I took hoop dance to a second level and also started fire dancing with a hula hoop.
Oh, wow.
I've been doing that for about 5 years.
What is that? I mean, can you describe that in a way that we can get an image on air? Because otherwise, sure, it might be kind of...
Sure. No,
the fire is not on the hoops.
No, the fire is not on the hoop, which is usually everyone's first assumption. Do you burn yourself? Well, only if I'm not careful. So with a fire hoop, you have the hoop itself, and then you have... on my hoops, I have 6.5-inch rods, threaded rods on them. And at the end of those rods, there are wicks that you dip into either white gas or a mix of white gas and lamp oil. Mm-hmm. And then you light those on fire, and then you spin the hoop.
Right, right. So they are at least 6 inches out from your
body. At least six, yes.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
At least on mine. Some people have 4.5-inch spines, which I think is crazy. But.
Yeah, well, some people have a greater capacity for danger.
It's true.
Than others of us.
It's true. It's true.
And there are certain lights that you want to shine, and others that you'd rather not have burned, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So fire dancing has been a wonderful heart-opening experience for me as well. As a fire sign myself, mm-hmm. I'm naturally attracted to it, and it's exhilarating. And definitely catches people's eye.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. And how has your family and how have your kids taken to this turn in your life? I don't know how old your kids are. So I don't
my birth children, there are a lot of children in my life.
I see,
yeah. But the two that I gave birth to.
Well, or those that you claim.
Those that I claim. My son is 20, uh-huh. and he lives in Fort Collins, Colorado. And my daughter is 18, and she lives with us at home. It's kind of funny. I've had a conversation with both of my children recently, as my stepdaughter has just recently moved in with us, and she's 11. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my children, I think about when my children were 11 and the headspace that I was in when my children were 11.
Right.
And it's very, very different.
Like 9-10 years ago. Yeah. Or 8 to 10 years. Yeah, yeah.
A long time ago. And one of the things that I've asked them was, you know, or actually it wasn't a question. I just said to them, you know, my stepdaughter is getting a piece of me that you guys didn't get.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Because I didn't start figuring myself out until they were, you know, well into their teens.
Were you maybe tightly packaged or somewhat tightly wound before this?
I don't know if tightly wound is how I would describe it. I'd say I was actually quite scattered.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I guess when I said that, we conceal ourselves by being too diffuse,
mm-hmm.
or by being too tightly wrapped,
mm-hmm.
and it works. It's fog in any way. Yeah, yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So
she gets something they didn't.
Exactly. But you know, both of my children. You know, when I started to create this shift in my life, I talked to my kids. I've always talked to my kids about like what life entails, the hard parts, the wonderful parts. Mm-hmm. So as I started creating this shift in my life, I talked to them about it. And I believe that the way that it's, or what it's impressed upon them is to figure out what it is that you love,
mm-hmm.
And then go do it.
Mm-hmm.
Realize that there are responsibilities that you have to take care of, you know.
Right.
But those responsibilities don't necessarily have to be the deciding factor.
Right, and you balance things.
Absolutely.
And you can do your love a thousand different ways. It's not just one thing. That's an obsession. That's not a love. You know,
good point.
And you can handle those responsibilities a thousand different ways.
Sure, absolutely.
If you have a heart for it.
Absolutely. I mean, my son's a great example. You know, he has been creating electronic music for the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. He started out in dubstep, which is electronic. I'm going to be nice about this. Very heavy electronic drum and bass monotony for a parent. Anyway.
Yes. And you listen to it for hours on end.
Oh God. Yes. The creative process could be very, very monotonous. The same drum beat over and over again. However, he has evolved in that. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's been his one great love for the last 6 years. And I was really concerned with whether or not he was going to get a job when he graduated from high school, because he really wanted to do this music thing, which is great. You know, I wanted to definitely encourage him in that, but also understand that there are responsibilities. If you're going to pay rent, if you're going to feed yourself, things of that nature, you need to find a balance in that. So, you know, I really feel like he's doing such an amazing job at that. He's in Fort Collins. He's got a great musical community out there. He's, you know, he's working a full-time job and making sure that all of his necessities are taken care mm-hmm. of while he is, you know, living his dream.
Yeah, that's cool.
Neat.
You brought music with you. Can we take a music break? What would you like to go to next?
One of my all-time old favorites, In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel.
I was wondering if that might not be the choice, just given how our conversation had gone.
Perfect.
Yeah. Love, I get so lost sometimes. Soldiers. Oh, I see the light and the heat.
and the grand facade so soon will burn without a noise.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Becky Hawley. So, Becky, the line, you know, without the noise, without my pride, I reach out from the inside. I see the light, the heat in your eyes. And I was just thinking what you were saying at the Burning Man Festival, when you were just seeing people doing, and I'm inferring from what you said that the scattered self that you were somehow began to come closer together.
Yeah, closer to center for sure.
Yeah.
It provided a doorway for me to learn how to connect with self, which was, I didn't really have a desire to. I didn't appreciate self so much before then.
Right. That is an incredible statement, and I want to take it apart a little bit. What has having a self meant, and what does having a desire for that self? I mean, they're two slightly different issues, but I think it's something that many of us struggle with, how to right-size the self, you know, so that it's not, we're not preoccupied with it, making it more important than it is, and we're not denying it, making it less important, and allowing others to kind of to take advantage of us in ways that shouldn't be. You know, I mean, the spiritual term for that is iniquity, where you have two big a focus on yourself at the expense of others, or where you have too little a focus on yourself and then others take advantage of you, but you don't have the self that you desire. What has that meant?
For me, it's been about acknowledging a part of me that is my fixer and my rescuer. And I think that in a healthy expression of that, I'm fixing and rescuing myself. In my unhealthy expression of that, I have a tendency to absorb myself in others.
Right.
And I've done that for a good majority, a vast majority of my life.
Right.
You know, trying to fix and solve other people's problems, to you know, make their lives easier and better, and in some way for me that helped me to feel good, it helped me to feel loved, it helped me to feel accepted, but it was coming from outside of me, and it, you know, these were, go ahead. No, what were you
saying? I see the image that comes to mind is like putting siding on a building rather than, and kind of shoring it up rather than living from the center out.
That's an interesting analogy. I'm trying to picture it. I feel like it was after I started to connect. Or actually, I guess after I saw people just being themselves, whatever that is, it was an opportunity for me to reflect, inwardly and say, wait a minute, I'm not the craziest color crayon in the box.
Right.
And
I don't need to be.
That's right, very right. true.
And So I want to just, what did you see in them sell? What were the kinds of things that you noticed that were authentic?
Joy. That was the biggest piece for me. It was like I was watching these people be joyful.
Unselfconsciously happy, joyful.
Without yes.
reservation, without hesitation.
Yeah, there was and freedom.
Right.
You know, I remember one specific experience, the dear friend of mine that encouraged me to go out to the desert. She and I are kind of polar opposites in that she's very structured, very, just very structured. I'll put it that way. And every time she would say my name while we were there, I would jump because I was like, she finally asked me, Becky, why do you respond like that? Every time I say your name, I'm like, you know, I am having so much fun. I feel like I must be doing something wrong.
Oh, wow.
At any given moment right. in time, you know, and that's what it was like, this freedom of just being. I had never experienced that before.
You hadn't? Wow. Well, being joyful without fearing having to regret it.
Yes. Yes. That's I hadn't thought about it in that way before.
I mean,
but that
for me as a child, when my father died when I was very young, and many of my joys were tied up with the contamination of a conflicted marriage that my parents had. I'm the sixth of seven kids, you know. There's a lot of conflict by the time the sixth one comes around.
Oh, sure.
If they're so, and so bittersweet has to be stripped away so that joy and sorrow can actually both be clean.
Indeed. You know, speaking to childhood and you know, thinking about where this all began as far as my feelings of being small
and conscious experience of it.
Conscious experience of it. You know, I grew up in southwestern Virginia. My mother is white. My biological father was black. My stepdad, who was in my life for basically since I was like one or two. He is my dad. And then I have two brothers. And I always kind of grew, well, I always felt not white enough for the white folks and not black enough for the black folks. And, you know, my brothers being that they were of my mother's marriage with my dad, I often felt.
Was like, he white?
Or yes. Stepdad? Yeah, my dad. My stepdad is white. He's just my dad. I don't ever refer to him as stepdad, but
the way the story flows.
Exactly. You know, I often felt as though I had to be small, because I didn't really fit in. I didn't feel like I fit in. And so I think that, you know, expressed itself over and over again throughout my life, throughout my teenage years, throughout my early adult years. Hence my desire to help people feel better so I could feel good about myself.
Right.
And I feel at this point in my life, I'm grateful for that experience though, because it definitely gives me a perspective so that when I'm interacting with people, I'm not so quick to judge and assume what their experience mm-hmm. is. It's given me an empathy. I mean, I think I've always been an empathic person, but, you know, my experiences, allow me, a perspective that I share with people that I meet, when I'm hearing their stories.
I imagine, and partly this is projection on my part, when you're more empathetic with your own story and your own struggle, you then listen and observe the fine movements of eyes and the holding of a head or the shift of posture, and you hear and receive the story in a much more complete way than you do when you don't have the empathy.
I could agree with that.
And you're having a narration on the other side rather than just openness.
Mm-hmm.
Makes us more observant.
Yes, I would agree with that for sure.
This is funny because I wanted to ask this question 15 minutes ago, but it wouldn't have made sense, but it does now. How have your relationships with other people changed as a result of your hoop practice and the internal shift in your light?
My relationships with people have changed.
From your point of view, they can speak for themselves another time.
Just in my ability to ask for what I want. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely an ever evolving process of learning my own limitations and boundaries. Mm-hmm. Coming to a place of understanding that I deserve to take up space in this world and I do have things of value to share. Mm-hmm. Has helped me in my relationships with people, in that I'm sharing more of myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as covert. I think it helps people understand me more,
mm-hmm.
Which in turn creates more understanding from me, mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. And when it's open and not covert, it doesn't feel imposed upon.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And there are not secondary gains that you get from helping other people to help yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It definitely come, my relationships feel more genuine, more authentic, deeper. There's a connection there in my relationships that was not available before.
Yep. That is a powerful story. That is a powerful story. Let's cut to music briefly. I think we have time for one more before the last one. So you've got two to pick from the Valles Alps piece and the Parabola, the tool piece.
That's kind of a hard choice.
Well, maybe we can get parts of both of them.
Well, you know what? Let's
do it. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and play part of Parabola, because I feel like that particular song also embodies some of the steps of that I've taken in my life with learning that we come to this earthly plane with a purpose. And I think one of those purposes is to establish connection. We go through a lot. We go through a lot of hardships. We go through a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
But we can with connection, we can overcome that. If we remind ourselves what we came back here for.
Mm-hmm. And I hear a hesitance, that, or at least a tentativeness in your voice, that we can overcome that, or maybe we can abide with each other to live through it.
I like that.
And which is a less big statement in some ways. And I think when you hesitated, I think you wanted to say something like that, but it was bigger than what, because we don't necessarily overcome.
Mm.
We just move through.
That's true.
And we abide with each other. There's a beautiful hymn, Abide With Me, which is a traditional Christian hymn that my grandfather's favorite one, and that has that quality. Mm. Anyway, here we go.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Becky Hawley. So, Becky, we're coming down to the last 10, 15 minutes of the show, and the place that I like to go at the end is what you do to take care of yourself, physically, emotionally, intellectually, on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, you know, and how you need, and how you know you need to do it. People have lots of different styles, so I'm not assuming anything, and it's a big, broad, open plate question. So where would you like to, what do you do to take care of yourself?
I have a variety of things that I do to take care of myself. When we talk about the day-to-day, mainly it's a practice of getting up really early, and taking some time specifically for myself to write in my journal. I've been journaling off and on since junior high school, because I feel challenged oftentimes by articulating things that I'm highly emotional about, journaling has really provided that platform for me to be able to really take my time and pick the right words, and also given me a way to gauge where I'm at in comparison to where I was.
Right. You have a record. You can go back to it.
Exactly. And I did that very recently. I looked over the journals for the last 5 years, just because I had a few incidences in my life that had knocked me off my horse, as you could say, and I was trying to figure out, you know, wait a minute, how do I get back on my horse? Where was I? So, journaling. I meditate, maybe not so much in the traditional sense of the word. Although,
well, what is it that you do more than the traditional sense?
Moving meditation. You know, when I started that shift once again back, you know, 5 years or so ago, one of the things that I knew I needed to do was create some space for quiet. However, with a brain like mine that never stops, it's that the whole idea of sitting in one place in full lotus and quieting my mind was absolutely terrifying and very, very hard to do. So it has been replaced with hoop dance, as you know, just hooping around the waist, which to me is a very simple thing to do.
Right, and it's a repetitive motion.
It's a repetitive motion.
Done in a certain way, it's like breathing for 7 to 10 minutes, or singing or dancing. I mean, it's the same effect on the body.
Exactly. And through that process, actually, I have been able to introduce stillness into my meditation as well. I think just doing that practice over and over again helped to encourage and invite that.
And the stillness being the stillness of your mind.
Yes.
Yes, because your body is active, and it allows their mind to be calm.
Exactly. Yeah. In addition to that, getting out into nature, that's a really important piece. You know, walking around barefoot is, you know, grounding for me. There are miracles in nature that if we slow down enough to watch, it's, for me, it's hard not to compare that to my life. Like when I see the miracles in nature, it's easier for me to accept miracles in my own life.
Right. Right. So, okay. And the way I thought you were going with that, and I want to explore this just a second, is that when you see something that provokes awe and wonder, which is usually the kind of the the emotional response to a miracle, you can become more open to seeing that in other places.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're saying.
Basically what I was saying, actually. Yeah. Just in a more articulate way.
Yeah. No, well, I don't know if it's more articulate or not. People, we can compare our lives and our experience to the world around us or to others in ways that are not healthy, and we can do them in ways that are healthy, and the issue is becoming skillful in the latter, and you just described a skill.
Awesome.
Yeah. Other things you do.
I go to festivals, transformational festivals. It's one of my favorite things at this point.
You're a festival junkie. No. No.
Maybe. It depends on who you ask.
So what do you mean? I mean, those are annual things, and how many of them do you go to and why?
About 5 a year, in the summertime. And I do because I really, in the festivals that I go to, are opportunities to practice the way we want to be in the world. It's bringing community together in this experiment, of co-creation, of participation and immediacy.
All of these things are ephemeral. They happen in a moment and are gone.
And
this is community versus institution. Institution usually is, you know, built into practices. It leaves artifacts. Community very rarely leaves anything other than the impression on other people.
It's true. But one of the things that I've taken away from that is, you know, the challenge is how do you bring that into your everyday world?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And the festivals that I attend help me to be that person that I want to be in the outside world.
So they recharge your community capacity back home.
Sure, absolutely. Not just community, but just in a lot of different ways. Okay. Self-expression. Mm-hmm. Just how I want to be in the world all the time, right. You know, with that joy, with that freedom. And it has drastically changed the way I am in the world over the last 5 years.
How?
Moving into entrepreneurship, I just recently started my own business. And this business is about helping people heal their relationship with money, taking some of the work that I did as a financial counselor and expanding on that. I think that I don't know that I would have had the courage to step into this realm of entrepreneurship, trusting myself as a teacher, as a leader, as a guide. Had it not been for my experience in these festivals that I go to, that I attend. I feel like it's helped me to also encourage others to do the same. The inspiration that I have gained from my involvement has in turn pushed me to expand my own horizons, and by doing that I'm inspiring other people to do the same.
Right. A lot of the practices that you described had to do with getting your emotions centered and rightly identified, and getting your physical self in good order. And now this piece it addresses the intellect in an interesting way. And one, you know, part of my work is looking at how people live their faith, and coming to terms with money is a major faith issue that many people don't really do very well. And it involves getting both intellectual and emotional, shrewdly intellectual in the analysis, as well as empathetic in mm-hmm. your emotions, so you can hold things without too much judgment, so you can change them. How did you have had a life in finance, which I should have inferred from working at Alternatives, but I didn't. How have your gifts become accessible to others because of this? You're an entrepreneur. You're mm-hmm. opening up this business to help heal people around money. What is it that they're coming to? What is it that you're offering?
One of the things that I offer is helping people get really, really clear on what they want. You know, how to align heart, mind, and action mm-hmm. to create their reality. Another piece of what I offer is in helping people to connect with the experiences of their past and their childhood mm-hmm. that inform the way that they engage with money as an adult. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like it or not, we didn't come out of the womb understanding how money works. And
neither did we evolve as a species understanding how money works.
And there it is. But because we stay so wrapped up in the dollars and cents of mm-hmm. of our issues around money,
right,
we oftentimes don't see that part of it. So I really enjoy the process of helping people have those aha moments of like, oh, right. Yeah. You know, and it can be as simple as, you know, I remember going to, going through the checkout line and having to put multiple things back because we didn't have enough money. Or I remember, my parents got divorced and they used to use money as a way to control each other. It's so deep. Mm-hmm. Creating that space, that safe space for people to get really raw and really vulnerable, mm-hmm. is an honor.
Yes. And you have a mind and a heart for it. That shows. Becky, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Oh, thanks, Eric. It's been a pleasure.
You wanted to close with Ben Howard's Keep Your Head Up.
Yes.
Do you want to say something about it before we play it?
Well, I really love people, just, human beings mm-hmm. in general. And I've said it multiple times during this, we all go through hard times. But if we can learn to trust ourselves and have people in our lives that we can trust to help support, to reflect that smile, it makes it that much easier.
Yep. Absolutely. Here we go.
I spent my time watching the spaces that had grown between us, and I cut my mind on second best, all the scars that come with the greenness, and I gave my eyes to the boredom. Still the seabed wouldn't let me in, and I tried my best to embrace the darkness in which I swim. Now walking back down this mountain, the strength of a turning tide, oh, the wind so soft at my skin, yeah, the sun so hot upon my side, all looking out at this happiness I search for between the sheets, or feeling blind to realize all I was searching for was me. Oh, oh, all I was searching for was me. Comfort invested in my soul, or to feel the warmth of
of his smile when he said, I'm happy to have you home. Oh, oh. Wildflowers, oh, the demons that change. Like wildflowers.